Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. We've been chatting today with 90-year-old Leo Neubauer of Centerville, Iowa. He's lived there for more than six decades, ever since the Nebraska native came to supervise the construction of the Rathbun Dam. Don't confuse that with the Ipo Dam, the strategic target in the Philippines that he helped American forces secure in 1945, restoring Manila's water supply. We're going to hear how Leo became a recipient of the Purple Heart, just like his brother did in Europe during World War II. But the reality was, it could have been worse. Leo was one of more than 2,800 men in the Cyclone Division, the 38th Infantry Division, to be wounded during that outfit's 9 months of combat in the Pacific. The division received a presidential unit citation from the Philippines for liberating that country, but there were nearly 700 men from Leo's division who were killed in action.
So the rest of us understand the kind of things that you went through and the price that we never had to pay that you guys did. Do you remember what that was like to either see a buddy of yours who you know is not coming home or just get that news?
Well, he didn't think much about it. If he did, why, it affects your brain. That's what the trouble is now with these lines that go over there now. They're letting them disturb them, see, and it works on their brain.
Was there something that you think helped you through that? That helped you avoid your pointing skyward, the man upstairs?
He pulled me through.
Well, tell me about that, because, you know, some guys, I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of veterans, and I've heard a lot of different versions. You know, some guys just say, hey, there's no atheists in foxholes. And other guys, it was something really real to them, that they were praying, and they felt somebody was listening, and they saw examples of things where they thought God intervened. Where do you fit into that? How did that work for you?
Oh, I still believe in him. That's why I'm still going. I've got cuts all over me. He's pulled me through every time.
Is that something where you're in that foxhole in the night, not knowing if another one of those bonsai charges is coming or who's going to be there the next morning or any of that, where you say a prayer?
Oh, I prayed when I shoot.
You were praying while you were shooting. What do you pray while you're shooting?
Pray that they mess me. But the only thing I really hated, when I woke up one morning and looked around, there laid two women, two nurses, Japanese nurses. I don't know whether I shot them or somebody else did. That's why you never hear me talk about shooting somebody.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that helps us understand what this was like for you. So especially when they make these charges in the night, you really don't know what you're shooting at, do you?
No.
You're just trying to keep whatever's out there away from where you are.
Just keep them away so they don't shoot me.
But eventually they did shoot you.
No, I got my bomb lit in front of the foxhole, see.
Tell me how it happened. Where was this?
Oh, out there in the jungle.
Uh-huh.
One of them attacks. See, and I jumped up to look like a dang fool. And I didn't stay down like I should have.
So most of the time when bombs or artillery are coming in, you're hunkered down in the foxhole. But this time you hear stuff and you get up to look, and what happened?
The bomb went off.
Right in front of you?
Right in front of the hole. That shrapnel, see, what hit me under here. Hit me here.
Hit you in the face, in the leg. What did that feel like?
Oh, it stung.
Were you bleeding?
Like a bloody hog.
Like a bloody hog. Yeah, I believe it. So what do you do from there?
Well, I have to wait till morning, couldn't you not?
This was in the night, and you're afraid if you try to go to an aid station.
Oh, hell, I wouldn't get out of that hole for nothing.
Again, I'm trying to imagine being you, this 18-year-old kid, half a world away from your family, and you've been hit, and you're in a hole, and the blasts are still going off, and you can't do anything about it. How did you get through that night?
Oh, I got through. I took my pants off, tore my shorts up to make bandages. I wrapped around one of my arm here, then I held my handkerchief on this one here.
Put your handkerchief on your face?
See, I was young enough, everything healed up.
Yeah, there's no scar under your left eye there, but that's where one of the pieces got you.
Yeah, you rub it long enough, it'll...
Is that the secret? Rub the scar right out? So you got it in your arm, your leg, your face, You're trying to bandage yourself up. Was that a painful night? Were you hurting?
Oh, a little bit.
Was that one of the longer nights you experienced?
I think so.
So then when daybreak comes, what do you do?
I go to the first aid station. Then I took me out of the hospital. I took all the pieces out and sent me on my way.
How many pieces of shrapnel you think they had to pluck out of you?
Oh, it took about half an hour. I had to go back a couple times. Then there'd be little pieces of steel.
Over time, it would continue to come to the surface, and you'd have to have them take out more. You don't have any still left in you anywhere, do you?
No.
Was it different after that for you? After you'd been wounded? Did it change the way you faced things?
No, this is tougher.
What about the Filipino people? Did you interact with them at all?
They get the food off the mess kits off of it. The little kids that stand there with gallon of buckets. I had a little boy that I'd always give mine to. After I ate, I'd go back and get a second helping for him.
So you would eat your food, and you would go get a second helping, pretending it's for you, and then you would take it and give it to a little Filipino boy.
Then he'd take it home to his mom.
So then his family would have way more than they had to begin with.
That happened all over, not just me.
Right. Does that give you some sense of pride or satisfaction, knowing what you guys did for a people there, the Filipino people who were oppressed?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you heard, but Congress just approved a congressional gold medal for Philippine scouts and the Filipinos who served alongside the U.S. Army over there during World War II.
They're tough. When I say tough, they're tough.
Well, and since time allows today, I thought it might add a little perspective to hear from one of those Filipino voices. I mentioned that Congress passed in December 2016 a law presenting the Congressional Gold Medal to all Filipino veterans of World War II, whether they were in the Philippine Scouts or any recognized guerrilla outfit there, or, like the man we're going to hear from, were actually serving in the U.S. Army in their home country of the Philippines. And here's how this gentleman's story connects with Leo's. Remember when I mentioned the 38th Infantry Division's nickname, the Avengers of Bataan, because they recaptured the Bataan Peninsula. It had been taken by the Japanese 3 years earlier, leading to the infamous Bataan Death March, when 75,000 American and Filipino troops were forced to march with little to no food or water, 65 miles or more in some cases, to the prison camps that would become their homes for the next 3 years if they survived. But so many did not survive. Thousands died on the march. It was the kind of atrocity that certainly produced motivation to avenge. One of the Bataan Death March survivors we've been fortunate enough to meet over the years here on Hometown Heroes is Atilano David. He is 96 years old now and still going strong in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He was actually able to escape from the Death March. We'll get a little taste of his story, which started before World War II when he enlisted in the U.S. Army. He was defending Bataan with the 33rd Infantry Division when Japanese forces attacked, and he quickly realized how overmatched they were.
We were grossly underprepared. Our rifles were too large for the Filipino. To sight the barrel, we had to put the heavy stock on our shoulders, and every time we fired, it bruised our shoulders. And most of the time, because the equipment came from World War I, some of them probably were not properly cleaned, or they were just obsolete. They exploded in our faces, and we had casualties. So the first engagement against the Japanese was a fiasco because we had exploding bombs, rifles. Our machine gun and mortar shells did not explode. They were duds. Most of our men were farmers and clerks. And some of us didn't even know how to handle a rifle. So we had to retreat from the beach defense to Agno River on North Luzon while we didn't have any more air cover. We lost 350 scouts on the first engagement in Agno River out of 800 because they, on horseback, they fought against tanks.
And these are the stories so many people are unaware of, and I'm so thankful we have you to clue us in a little bit. Were there rumblings of the surrender before it happened, before General King said, yep, this is it?
No, it was a total surprise. Well, most of us cried because we didn't want to surrender. And then when the order came to surrender, a lot of us were still fighting. In spite of the order to surrender, they were bombing us anyway. We were on the last defense on Mount Samat. We lost most practically all of our 33rd Infantry was wiped out on Samad. And when I came to me to surrender, I had a choice of going into the mountains because there was a rumor that we could go. Anybody who surrendered was shot anyway. They had orders to kill all prisoners. As a matter of fact, there's a record in the books which says the first surrenderers were about 300 mixed U.S. Army and the Philippine Army. They were massacred, 300 of them, and they had surrendered.
I can't imagine what that feels like to be in a situation where you have to make that decision. And you had family to worry about too, right?
Yes, I had a girlfriend who was waiting, and I didn't know where she was. She didn't know where I was. My father didn't even know I was in the Army because I didn't tell him.
What do you think led you to decide what you decided, and how scary and frightening was that?
We decided to surrender because if we went to the mountains, we were blocked anyway, and we could be captured anyway. But when we surrendered, a lot of us went away to the hills, including Colonel Torpy, who became the guerrilla leader in Zambales Mountains. When I escaped from the death march, that's what I joined. When we first surrendered, we were lined up. Anybody found with Japanese money, paper money, or anything, or a sword, or as a souvenir, or anything that has a Japanese marking, the owner, the soldier who had it, was usually beheaded or beaten up. On my own, they tried to take my watch and my military ring, and I objected. And when I objected, the soldier hit me with the butt of his rifle in the belly and on my shins. So I fell down on my knees, and I was so angry I was going to retaliate when I got up. But a buddy mine held me back. He said, "Don't howl, you. It's going to kill you," because they've done that. And when we gathered together in groups of 100, sometimes groups of 50, to start us on the march. On the march, even before I got too far from the site of surrender, I saw already bodies on the road, bayoneted. And these are not soldiers who were fighting, but they were sick, too sick to go on with malaria, dysentery. That's when I began to lose hope. I said, "Oh, I'm going to die." In the next town, if I have a chance, I'll die trying to escape or escape. And I did that.
So how far into the march was that? How many days?
One day. So when I escaped, what my buddies were trying to do was, because I could not stand up anymore, and they could not carry me anymore. I had malaria and dysentery and a shrapnel wound, and I was fainting. So he said, "The next chance we have, you better go." When we saw the Japanese away from the guarding us, I tried to escape through the bushes, but they suddenly jerked my back, and they said, "I'll wait for another chance." At this point, I decided to die marching because I was scared for some reason or other. No, I got scared. When they saw a gap a few miles afterwards, they pushed me through the bushes, and I fell across the bushes into a trench dug out by the Filipino occupants of the house by the road. And they covered me with banana leaves and bamboo leaves.
So you get pushed by your friends, who've already saved your life a couple times, it sounds like, by holding you back from retaliating and then telling you not to escape then. They push you into the bushes, you fall into this trench, and you're so weak you don't even know what to do, but these occupants of the house come down and cover you?
I was out for a while because I was sick and thirsty and starving. When I woke up, I was already in the house, and they nursed me for 3 days. On the fourth day, I told them that I had to go, and they pointed me. They gave me a map where to join the rest of the group. Apparently, they had help other people. Many soldiers escaped through the same, so they knew where to go.
And, you know, there are so many great stories about the war in Europe, and we hear about you know, the Corey Ten Booms of the world and the Anne Frank situation or Oscar Schindler and these people that protected some of the Jews. And we don't hear so many stories about the Pacific, but really these people risked their lives to save yours. How did that make you feel? How indebted did you feel to those folks?
Lifetime, but when I came back, I was back into the MacArthur Liberation Army. I looked for them, but they had moved away already. I know their last names, De La Cruz, but up to now I've not been able to contact them.
And it sounds like you've spent some time trying.
This is the same time I was looking for my sweetheart, and because they had gone to the hills and I didn't know where. So it took me a while to finally give up. So when I finally found where she was home in Manila.
And a lot happened in between there. And I know you have learned a lot over the years. You're involved in the Bataan Corregidor Survivors Group, and you've met a lot of other people who survived the march, and you know how many died on the march. Is there any question in your mind that if you hadn't escaped at that point, that you would have survived or not? What do you think would have happened?
I would have died on the way. I probably would have died of starvation and thirst on the way, or malaria or dysentery.
If you'd like to hear that complete interview with Mr. David, look for episode number 336 at hometownheroesradio.com. But what we just heard certainly gives us an idea of what happened on the Death March and why retaking Bataan was more than just securing a piece of land for Leo Neubauer and the men of the 38th Infantry Division. We're going to get back to Leo's story when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Effler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 800 veterans have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.